Hello and welcome to Ladylike, Women Who Made It to the Moon, the show all about women, diversity, and feminism in pop culture. This is Ladylike and I'm your host, Rita Big. The announcement of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child caused a great deal of anticipation inside the hearts of Potterheads across the globe. The production had broken records by selling 175,000 tickets in 24 hours. It was expected to be the theatrical event of the year. However, it wasn't the distasteful reviews from two Potter fans that caused its controversy, but rather its decision to cast Noma Dumanwene, a Black actress, to portray Hermione Granger. Today on Ladylike, we'll be discussing diversity in pop culture. My guest today is Pierce College's very own Professor Mickey Harrison. Hey, Professor, thanks for being here today. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I want to start off simple, as I always do, and I feel like anyone who knows you or anybody who, like, comes in whatever vicinity of you knows that you're a huge Harry Potter fan. What inspired you to pick up its books and, like, become so involved in Harry Potter and, you know, really, really like it?
That's a very interesting question, and I have a really long answer that I'll try to keep brief. When I first decided to go back to school at 30 years old, one of the first classes I took as basically a freshman at 30 years old was children's literature. And I remember my professor talking about Harry Potter at the time and how it wasn't considered part of the canon. So we're talking about early 2000, 2001, something like that. And then she was the person who found the thing in me that said I should be teaching. This is what I was meant to do, and I should be an English professor. And so that would put me on my path. 10 years later, I get hired full-time at Pierce College. And all full-time faculty have one literature class that they're sort of – I guess, gifted, mm-hmm. if you will. And the person that I was replacing had had the children's literature class for some 50 years. And so that was the class that I got. And the very first thing that I wanted to do was make sure that this class was focusing on what I thought was most important about mm-hmm. children's literature, especially within the last 20 years. Historically, it's always been regulated to the Grimm's fairy tales and those sort of classic things that we've seen Disney reproduce. And I wanted to sort of re-experience Harry Potter. I figured the best way to do it would be for myself to become a student of the literature again, and then to realize that most of my students weren't even alive or were barely alive when the first text came out, and that there's a whole generation of Potter fans out there. And that just inspired me even more to want to keep this going.
Wow, I think I just, like, shed a tear a little. That was very beautiful. So were you excited when Harry Potter and the Cursed Child was first announced, or were you like, I don't care about this, the series is over?
I have to admit, I was really, really excited. I fell into the trap of thinking that this was the eighth book in the series, even though I'd been warned by Rowling to not think that way. Mm-hmm. I did go to a midnight Barnes & Noble.
Oh my goodness.
To pick up the text, and I was in house robes with some friends. And it was nice to sort of experience all of that again. And I love the fact that people are standing in line overnight for a book, right? That still doesn't happen today. And J.K. Rowling obviously has a power that I don't think anybody has been able to match. I read it right away, and it was not what I was hoping for.
I think plenty of people would agree with you where it was that anticipation and that you know, that feeling of when you're standing in line at a movie theater waiting for the midnight premiere and everybody's dressed up as Harry Potter characters. But for those of the people in the audience who are unfamiliar with Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, could you briefly summarize what's it about?
Well, I think there was sort of a trap that J.K. Rowling fell into, because she advances the last chapter of The Deathly Hallows as 19 years later in the life. It was 19 years, right?
Yeah, I think so. I'm
check my references. I'm only supposed to be an expert. And so it leaves us at the train station with grown-up Ron, Hermione, and Harry. And this is exactly where The Cursed Child picks up. And I thought it was excellent, and I thought it was a really, really good idea. The problem with the text is, and it goes through the life of Harry's sons and their experience at Hogwarts, as well as some of the other main characters, siblings, or children, sorry. And I think that everybody wanted it to be the eighth book and read like a book, but it was made and written to be performed.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately have not seen it yet. I wish I had. If I knew I was going to be doing this radio show, I definitely would have gone over the winter break, because I was thinking about doing that just to go see it in London. But everyone that I've talked to that's seen it says it's wonderful and that it's really, really good and it needs to be experienced in that format. And I can appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And I would love to give it that chance, but I think that there was so much expectation surrounding it. And a lot of things were done in the text that probably J.K. Rowling wouldn't have done. So I think just having another person sort of hand this off to didn't sit well with fans either.
Yeah, I think J.K. Rowling was just in it for the buck. I don't think she really was looking forward to continuing the story.
Which seems surprising to me because she's so much in control of
this world
that she really doesn't let too many people in.
Yeah. So when Dumenze, the black actress that was casted as Hermione, how did you take it, black Hermione? How did you think about that?
So I have two different perspectives on this. The first is, I think it's really easy for us to sort of look at color and, you know, and make that the issue. I think the harder thing here is these texts, and to a larger degree, probably even the movies, are such a big part of pop culture that it's hard to separate the character from the person. And I think that Emma Watson has completely lived up to the role of Hermione. I think she sort of met all of those expectations. And while this text is written out of J.K. Rowling's mind, I she did sign off on Emma Watson. And so for the public, that's always going to be Hermione. And I get that, and I can appreciate that. I love Emma Watson both as an actress and as an activist as well. But when we're talking about literature, when we're talking about performance and this idea of entertainment, it's not about color and sex, right? And this was an issue when I was studying Shakespeare. Actually, I studied Shakespeare in London, and they had some of the first black actors that were portraying some of the Shakespeare parts, Hamlet specifically. And that sort of caused an uproar. Mm-hmm. And I sort of realized, like, we are really not past this color problem that we have. We can't just accept an actor for their acting prowess and appreciate the part and the delivery. We're still hung up on this idea that Hamlet is
a white dude,
yeah. And so it has to be portrayed by a white dude. I also like the biography that was recently done about Bob Dylan, where they had different actors portraying him as well, and they weren't all male. Mm-hmm. And, some of the better performances were done by a female. So I think that it's a real problem that this has to be an issue at any level. And the only way you're going to get around that is to have Emma Watson portray Hermione forever.
Yeah.
And that can't happen, right? Before we started, we were just talking about Logan. Right? Mm-hmm. And for some people, it's going to be really hard to see Wolverine as somebody else.
That's not Hugh Jackman.
But that has to happen.
Way. Yeah, I feel the same way, With all these Marvel movies, Robert Downey Jr., he's getting old. He's not going to be Tony Stark forever. And it hurts my heart, but I know that's, the only way it's going to be. So when the controversy of the whole, Hermione is black controversy started, J.K. Rowling did tweet, "Canon, brown eyes, frizzy hair, and very clever. White skin was never specified. Rowling loves black Hermione." When you read a book, interpretation plays a great role in visualizing the story. Would you agree with that?
Again, I'm going to have two answers. I saw that tweet when it came out, and I was actually upset by it because I think one of the problems that Rowling has had is she has retroactively sort of gone back and reimagined the characters as they would fit in a sort of politically correct time. I think that if Rowling had totally intended for this to be what we would call a black character, that she would have very specifically pointed that out in the text. Mm-hmm. And I also think that when it came down to casting the movies, that same thing would have held true as well. So I don't believe that she ever intended that. And when I teach literature, I teach that even though the author says something, that doesn't mean it's true. Because she may have written that without even knowing or understanding what her true intentions were. And that's really up to us as readers to mm-hmm. determine what that's going to be. And she did this with Dumbledore as well, right, where she sort of retroactively had hinted that Dumbledore was a homosexual.
Yeah.
And that's great, but if you're really going to stand for progressive change, you need to put that in your text. You need to make Dumbledore a homosexual character mm-hmm. in 1998 when you're penning this, and then let the chips fall where they may. You can't do it 20 years later and say, well, I always sort of intended for him to be this, and this is why this means. Now, I'm not saying you have to outline all of those things, but I do think that she does a little bit too much retroactive politically correctness. Mm-hmm. And I think this was one of those moments.
So that was a great answer, by the way. I think I agree with you because J.K. Rowling is falling in that category, but she sort of, I've noticed that in recent years when Fantastic Beasts came out, she sort of took a step back because when Grindelwald was revealed to be Johnny Depp, a lot of people were furious because of the controversy with Johnny Depp and the allegations against his wife, Amber Heard. And when people were like, hey, J.K. Rowling, you're a victim of abuse as well. How can you have this man who's had these allegations against him be in your movie? And she sort of went to the, oh, well, you know, talent, and like, we're focusing on what I see as Grindelwald. What is your opinion on that? That she's, you know, having this very progressive way, you know, black Hermione, gay Dumbledore, but we also have an abuser in one of our movies.
That's a very great question. I haven't really contemplated this probably as much as I should have. And I'm a big Johnny Depp fan. If anybody knows, you know, I at one time considered him to be the most gorgeous person on the planet.
I agree. He was my first ever celebrity crush.
I think he still is my first ever celebrity crush. I kind of find him more attractive than I do like any celebrity women. And that's coming from, you know, a straight heterosexual man. But Johnny Depp is gorgeous, and and he's very, very talented. And, you know, I love sort of the string of movies that he did in late 90s and early 2000s. I do think that Rowling probably fell into the trap of wanting to have star power to this franchise. And you're right, maybe it is part of a money grab. And I think that if she really was standing behind the issues, the social issues that she seems to be important to her, that she would have demanded that this wouldn't happen. And it seems to me that she probably would have the power to stop that. Now, I don't know for specifically what those legal arrangements are, contractual arrangements, but I do think it's somewhat hypocritical. That being said, I do sort of have a problem with us deciding, and I say us as a society, mm-hmm. who's going to get a pass and who's not going to get a pass based on sort of the court of public opinion. And you know, this is becoming a much, much bigger problem.
Yeah.
I know that you said you have an Oscars question, so I don't want to go to the Oscars right away. But I did have something to say about that, so I'll wait.
We're getting to it. This is more of another simple question. So people think that
are the easy ones?
Yeah, these are the easy ones. So if Hermione is white, played by Emma Watson, she's white. It's remade, she stays white. People are saying that's how it is. But if a character is black and then the character ends up being portrayed as white, is that wrong? Or if a character who's originally white is played as black, can we like mix ethnicities, if that makes sense? An example I like to give is a lot of people are upset when Jason Momoa was cast as Aquaman because Aquaman, Arthur Curry, is a white dude. And people are like, oh, well, if you can make Aquaman this ethnic person, then you can make someone like Black Panther, terrible example by the way, a white guy. Would you agree with that, this like race bending sort of concept?
I think the problem that we're talking about is a historic majority. Of course, most of our country and most of Western Europe has been ruled by white men. And we've seen that played out in every sort of business and entertainment avenue as well. And historically, of course, these white men of power, and let's just say, because I have people that are in the comic book industry, or friends that are in the comic book industry, that these white men of power were hiring other white men. So you had very little diversity of female or people of color that were being hired for comic books. So, of course, those people, those white men, are going to write characters and depict them the way that they see the world. And these were traditionally from as white heroes and white villains. So I think that it's important that we look to see how we can expand that diversity in the arts. But at the same token, and I've had this conversation, if we have a traditionally Asian character, I think this came up with, I believe it was Resident Evil, where, you know, it's portrayed and cast as a female Asian character, but when they were looking to do sort of the American adaptation, that they weren't looking for Asian American characters to portray the lead. And they wanted someone that had kind of white star power. So I do see a little bit of hypocrisy there, but I think the underlying thing is to realize that traditionally, historically, these people have not had a chance to have these parts, and we need to give them an opportunity to flourish.
And I like how you mentioned the whole Resident Evil situation, because we saw that last year with Scarlett Johansson in Ghost in the Shell, where...
Actually, that's what I meant, Ghost in the Shell. Yeah, sorry.
It's okay. I wanted to bring that up because it is true. I mean, you're taking something that is rooted deeply in Japanese culture. The Ghost in the Shell setting is taking place in Tokyo, but you decide just to cast a white person because you want to make money.
And then we really come down to what is the social responsibility that a business has. I don't know who made Ghost in the Shell, but, you know, whatever movie theater X, do they actually have a social responsibility to cast an Asian character when portraying this movie? And if they're going to put up the money, right, to try to entertain people and get a return, do they even have social responsibility? And do we put too much pressure on them too? I'm not sure what the answer is. I think, again, historically, yes, we need to do that. But is it really up to Warner Brothers or MGM to make those changes?
Are you asking for my opinion?
Sure.
Well, I think that, yes, there is a responsibility, because movies, any form of pop culture, reflects society. Society isn't everybody that looks like you, you know? It's society that people look like me. And if you're going to reflect that in your films, then do it. I mean, look at Black Panther.
That's a really bad example that you did, because we're doing radio, so
no one
knows what either one of us look like.
He's a white dude.
Thanks.
He's a white dude, and I'm a very, very beautiful brown girl. So, yeah.
So, by default, I'm not a beautiful white dude? Is that what you're saying?
Hey, come on. Let's keep it this. Let's keep talking about this. So, yeah, as I was saying, with Black Panther, that broke records. Wonder Woman broke records. When I watched Wonder Woman, I heard women crying in the audience. So what do you mean that, is it a production's responsibility? Of course it is. They're the ones making the movies. Would you agree or would you disagree?
No, I don't necessarily disagree. I do think that sometimes we get lost between the difference of sort of their social responsibility of us as individuals, right? If we're talking about the historic not allowing, say, African-Americans to go to certain schools or go to college in this country, right? There's a social responsibility to make sure that you write that. Does Facebook or Ford Motor Company have that same responsibility when they are selling a product to try to make money, right? We live in a capitalist society, and they have the freedom to, you know, advertise or promote their product however they want. Because at the end of the day, they are still selling a product, and they have to make money over loss. Otherwise, there's not going to be a company. And I'm not saying it's necessarily right. I think that we are on the right path. I just wonder how much we rely too much on Paramount to do this thing versus us as, you know, government, local, and state and federal.
That's true. So another simple question. When you read Harry Potter, how did you envision the characters?
So I'm going to reveal a little deep secret here.
Ooh, okay.
Hopefully none of my students are listening. I actually never read this series until the movie series was over.
No, you... Seriously?
Seriously. So I saw all the movies in order before I read a single word.
I mean, I read the books before I watched the movies. It was read to me, actually, in elementary school. So the only people that are like descriptive is Ron, red hair, freckles, that's it. So you, when you read it, you just saw Daniel Radcliffe as Harry Potter.
Well, yeah, because I hadn't read any of the texts. I sort of just accepted on face value what everybody looked like based on the original casting.
All right. And as we mentioned, I was going to talk about the Oscars. And it had a great deal of diversity in its categories. But do you think it was just damage control after the whole Oscars so white scenario? Or do you think they're actually recognizing talent? Because there was something said when the director category was being introduced. Emma Stone said, four directors and Greta Gerwig, the only female nominee. But she totally ignored that two of the men were men of color. So do you think that they even care? Or do you think they're doing it because they want to be politically correct? They want people to watch?
I think that they're totally trying to be politically correct. Once again, I don't think that it's Hollywood's place, and I would say place, but responsibility to make social change. I do think that a lot of this is damage control. And again, we're talking from a very historic Hollywood is sort of an old white guy's place.
Field,
right?
Yeah.
It's the old white guy's field top to bottom. And I think that making a comment like Emma Stone did and Natalie Portman, right, mm-hmm. for the Golden Globes.
Golden Globes, where she said just only four guys.
Right. Yeah. And I think that not only does that not push your cause, but I think it actually does the opposite. I think it sort of turns people away from you. And I've read some polls that a lot of people have stopped watching these award ceremonies because they have become too political.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, this is an entertainment business. It's no different than watching the Lakers, right? You go there to be entertained, to sort of forget about life. And I'm not saying that the stuff isn't important, but social change can't come because somebody's shoving it down your throat, right? It needs to come from within your local – it needs to come from within your bedroom, you know, mm-hmm. from your household, your city, community, and expand.
Yeah.
That's how social change has to happen.
That was a wonderful, well-spoken answer. I liked that answer, actually. And finally, I always like to end with something fun. If you could cast yourself as any character in Harry Potter, who would it be?
Oh, hands down, I'd be Harry.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Because everybody wants to be terrorized by Voldemort.
Yeah, I like to be the underdog and the hero. And I like the idea of dying and being reborn.
That's pretty
so, you know,
nice.
I sort of like to be Jesus. Because that's really what Harry
yeah,
is, right?
Yeah.
The
whole conspiracy
story.
Theory on that. All right. And as we come close to an end, I'd like to thank our guest, Professor Mickey Harrison, for joining us today. You're listening to KPC Radio. I'm your host, Rita Baig, and this is Ladylike.